From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because truth matters and life matters more. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man, we pick up where we ended on our previous broadcast and present more of an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank is talking with Dr. Casey Luskin, Associate Director of Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture and author of Lessons Learned and Not Learned from the Evangelical Debate Over Adam and Eve in the upcoming issue of the Christian Research Journal. Let's now join Hank Hanegraaff and Casey Luskin in their conversation.
What about ideas that have been bandied about, like punctuated equilibrium?
Sure. So punctuated equilibrium was developed in the 1970s by two paleontologists, Stephen Jay Gould and Niles Eldridge, as an attempt to explain why we don't see these transitional forms in the fossil record. And if you read the writings of Eldridge and Gould, they're very open and candid about the fact that we are missing these transitional, gradual transitional evolutionary forms in the fossil record. And what they basically said is paleontologists need to reconcile and reckon with the fact that we do not see these transitional forms in the fossil record. The problem that they were trying to rectify is that up until that time, paleontologists had typically dismissed the lack of transitional forms by just appealing to what was called the imperfection of the fossil record. And it's just sort of this very generic excuse of saying, well, the fossil record is not perfect. Maybe these transitional forms lived, but they just didn't get fossilized. After all, not everything that lived has been fossilized. And what Gould and Eldridge said is, no, you know, this pattern of lacking transitional forms, it's a real phenomenon. We have to take it seriously. We have to actually find a way to explain why we don't find these transitional forms. So Gould and Eldridge, they were evolutionists, okay? They were not creationists. They were not intelligent design proponents. They were evolutionists. And the way that they tried to explain the lack of transitional forms was through this model called punctuated equilibrium. And according to that model, the vast majority of evolutionary change takes place in the vast minority of the time and in the vast minority of the organisms. Basically, they said that evolutionary change tends to happen in small populations over very short periods of time, such that the transitional forms do not have time or opportunity to become fossilized. Okay? So, fine. They basically are saying that we're compressing all the evolutionary change into the vast minority of the time and organisms, and that's why we don't see any transitional forms. Well, there's a few problems with that. And a lot of biologists actually pushed back on their model because, for one, it required too much change too quickly. Even Darwin in Origin of Species acknowledged that one of the glories of his theory was that you could have very large populations where the sort of random and rare fortuitous variation could arise that would allow species to evolve new complex traits or allow species to evolve into new species. So you have these large populations with many individuals, and Darwin said that this allows many opportunities for the beneficial variation that his theory of evolution needs to produce for natural selection to preserve. Well, the problem is that punctuated equilibrium robs Darwin of those probabilistic resources. It says that no, the vast majority of evolutionary change does not take place in these large populations. It takes place in small populations. That means, however, that the likelihood of getting the beneficial, you know, variation or these sort of very rare, maybe you could call them hopeful monsters, but these rare traits that happen to be beneficial that randomly arise, the likelihood of getting those in these small populations is much, much lower. So biologists realized that basically punctuated equilibrium was not a good model for allowing Darwinian evolution to succeed. It did not give Darwinian evolution the probabilistic resources that it needed. And so what we've seen is that punctuated equilibrium has been opposed by many biologists, but it's sort of been occasionally invoked by paleontologists when they find an abrupt appearance of a new species in the fossil record, but they never get into any detail of how that actually is consistent with a Darwinian model of evolution. Now, granted, at the end of the day, Gould and Eldridge said that Darwinian evolution is the way evolution happens. It does happen by small mutations, one at a time. but I don't think they've ever done a good job of actually explaining how they could reconcile their model of rapid evolution in punctuate equilibrium, or it's often called punk eek, how they could reconcile punk eek with the kind of, you know, gradual Darwinian change that they claim to believe in. And I think that there's a real disconnect there that remains to this day, which is why punk eek has, you know, it's still occasionally invoked in the literature, but it's not really caught on, I think, as much as they would have hoped. And it's not taken off to the extent that they would have liked when they first proposed it in the 1970s.
I got a couple of other things on my list to ask you about. One of them is convergent evolution. According to evolutionary biologists, the extreme similarities between human and squid eyes result from convergent evolution. Can you unpack that a little bit for us?
Yeah, sure. So convergent evolution is when two different types of organisms just happen to independently stumble upon the same basic body structure or morphology, as we call it, or organ, or even in some cases, gene sequences. And they just happen to, by chance, stumble upon the exact same structure or sequence. What's interesting is that Richard Dawkins says, in, I believe, his book, The Blind Watchmaker, that the likelihood of any two organisms traversing the same sequence or evolutionary pathway twice is very, very unlikely. And yet we see it all the time in biology. Basically, in order to understand convergent evolution, you have to understand how biologists construct phylogenetic trees, okay? Biologists tend to assume when they're constructing a phylogenetic tree that when you see similar traits in two organisms, that that is the result of common ancestry. The common ancestry is why we get similarity across different types of organisms, okay? However, sometimes you get similarities in organisms that cannot be explained through common ancestry. And so a good example of this would be the similar design of the eye in human beings and cephalopods. Cephalopods would be squids and octopi and cuttlefish. We have a very similar basic design of the eye in both vertebrates and cephalopods. Cephalopods are a mollusk, okay? So an octopus is much more closely related to a clam or a snail than it is to you or me, according to evolutionary theory. So the fact that we have a very similar basic design of our eyes, it's a camera type of eye, is said to be not the result of common ancestry between humans and squid or octopus or cephalopods. It's said to be the result of convergent evolution, where just by chance, we happen to evolve the same basic design of the eye in both vertebrates and cephalopods. And it was not the result of sort of common ancestry. It was a result of just chance convergence. All right. So the problem is, okay, how far do you want to take this? All right. We see convergent evolution appearing in some very complex traits where you have very, very high degree of similarity in different types of organisms that are very, very diverse, very, very different. And I think that a better explanation for convergent evolution in these cases would be common design rather than common descent. So I think that the camera eye that you raised, Hank, is a great example. Another one is echolocation. We see that two very different types of mammals, bats and whales, can both use echolocation. Hugely different types of mammals, right? You probably couldn't come up with two mammals that are more different than a bat and a whale, yet they both use echolocation to navigate and find food, okay? So that cannot be the result of common ancestry, because nobody says that those two organisms are so closely related that they inherited their echolocation abilities from a common ancestor. What they would say is that, again, that's the result of convergent evolution, where they just happen to stumble upon the same design just by chance. And I think that, again, a better explanation than convergent evolution would be common design in these cases. And what's interesting is that these are not isolated examples. Convergent evolution is extremely common. And basically, every time you see convergent evolution being invoked by an evolutionary biologist, it is because they found similarity between two types of organisms that they could not explain through common ancestry. Okay? Simon Conway Morris, who is a very prominent and prestigious evolutionary biologist at Oxford, he says that convergence is ubiquitous. He uses the word ubiquitous over and over again in his books to explain how common convergent evolution is. And so if we think about this for a minute, if the basis, if the fundamental assumption when we construct evolutionary phylogenetic trees is that similarity is the result of common ancestry, okay? But yet we find ubiquitous examples of similarity that cannot be explained, even from an evolutionary perspective, cannot be explained by common ancestry, to the point that we have this idea that convergent evolution is ubiquitous. What does that say about the basic methods that are used to construct phylogenetic trees? It says that that basic assumption that similarity is the result of common ancestry fails constantly, even according to evolutionists' own models. And so that really calls into question the basic methods and assumptions that are used to construct phylogenetic trees in those happy cases where they can explain similarity through common ancestry. But there are so many cases where they cannot do that, and I think many of these cases are much better explained by common design. Convergent evolution is better explained by common design, typically, than saying that they just, you know, happen to experience the same selection pressures and natural selection led them to the same solutions.
Stay right there. We'll be back soon to rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Dr. Casey Luskin. Science and Christianity are often presented as contradictory opposites, when in fact, the fine-tuning and order of the universe and the specified complexity of life powerfully testify to intelligent design. With the Comprehensive Guide to Science and Faith, you'll witness how the latest findings of scientists provide compelling reasons to acknowledge the mind and presence of a creator. To receive your copy of the Comprehensive Guide to Science and Faith, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. When you need answers about the Bible and the intersection of our faith and culture, you turn to the Bible Answer Man broadcast and the Christian Research Institute. But did you know we're entirely supported by God's provision through friends like you? In appreciation for your gift of ministry support today, we'll send you Hank's book, The Third Day, a convincing case study on the most important truth of Christianity, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Johnny Erickson Tada has said, "Hank leaves no stone unturned, thoroughly portraying the resurrection as our grand hope, the glorious springboard from which we all dive into eternity." Strengthen your defense of the resurrection and increase your confidence in your own eternal future. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org now. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. The Christian Research Journal's primary commitment is to contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. In keeping with this commitment, the journal's mission is both evangelistic and pastoral, furthering the proclamation and defense of the historic gospel of Jesus Christ and helping his followers distinguish between essential Christian doctrine and doctrine that is peripheral, aberrant, or heretical. In an age of subjectivism and moral relativism, may Christians ground their faith and values in the objective, reliable testimony of Holy Scripture. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. Bertrand Russell famously said, "Most people would rather die than think, and many of them do." Not so with CRI support team members. Support team members are not only serious thinkers, but their membership in CRI's support team helps to equip hundreds of thousands of fellow believers around the globe each and every month. Are you not a member? Then you're missing out. Not only do support team members form the backbone of Christian Research Institute's outreaches, but they enjoy their selection of resources from our Equipping Essentials library and receive a complimentary subscription to CRI's award-winning Christian Research Journal, just two of the benefits of membership. To discover how you can make a difference 24/7 in equipping believers at home and abroad to stand for life and truth, check out the benefits of membership at equip.org. The evolutionary naturalist Richard Dawkins famously wrote that biology is the study of complicated things that give the appearance of having been designed for a purpose. Dawkins has spent a career trying to show that purposeful design in living things is really just an illusion. But is it? Could it be that our intuition of design in nature is correct after all, and we can know that it is? Yes, and you'll see why in the Comprehensive Guide to Science and Faith. To receive your copy of the Comprehensive Guide to Science and Faith, a rigorous and thorough defense of intelligent design, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. Well, here once again are Hank Hanegraaff and his guest, Dr. Casey Luskin, as they continue their conversation.
You know, I'm thinking as you're speaking about the complexity of some of these arguments and the difficulty for a lot of people who are just plain old lay people like myself listening to these arguments and trying to absorb the information. When on the other side of the ledger, the evolutionists have been very wise. They've come up with icons, and the icons have in and of themselves become the argument. So I'm thinking, for example, what we talked about earlier, Casey, we talked about the Darwin Tree of Life icon, or I think about the ape to man icon, and students see these icons and they think, well, there you have it. You have a progression from apes to human beings, and that demonstrates in some rational way that evolution corresponds to reality. So I want to get at your perspective of how we can solve the problem of our kids seeing the icon and buying into the argument, an argument that is inherently flawed, but nonetheless seems to have some validity because of the picture people are watching.
Well, first off, I appreciate your kind words about the brain fog. I think this is one of those times where as you start talking, you know, you kind of get the juices flowing a little bit. So I feel a lot more lucid now than I did at the beginning of the podcast. And hopefully that's a sign that maybe I'm starting to come out of this brain fog. But anyway, enough about brain fog. So yeah, I mean, we do need to do whatever we can to get the message out about these icons of evolution. For those of your listeners who are not familiar with the icons of evolution, biologist Jonathan Wells wrote a book by the same title in the year 2000 titled Icons of Evolution. And in that book, he surveyed many biology textbooks to look at the common lines of evidence that they used to support evolution. And he found that those lines of evidence were actually wrong. I mean, when you looked at the technical literature, they were even no longer believed or they've been outright refuted. And these were the most common lines of evidence that were being used to teach students about evolution in textbooks. So I really think that the solution, and these icons are still in the textbooks, by the way. Jonathan Wells wrote a follow-up sequel to Icons that came out in 2017 called Zombie Science. And he called it Zombie Science because the icons of evolution just wouldn't die. You know, they just kept coming back. And he was trying to show that, you know, despite all the work that had been done showing these icons were false, oftentimes, you know, papers that were written in the mainstream scientific literature showing that these icons were false, but they were still persisting in textbooks. So to make a long story short, there is still a lot of misinformation in biology textbooks. And I think what's important is that we just need to get the message out to students. Discovery Institute on our YouTube channel, we have a lot of great resources to help students to learn about scientific challenges to Darwinian evolution and the evidence for intelligent design. Go to our Discovery Science News YouTube channel, and you can find many great videos to help combat the misinformation that is so common out there on the internet. Another great resource is our website, evolutionnews.org. We often have articles that are critiquing the icons. In fact, for your listeners who are familiar with Khan Academy, I don't know, Hank, are you familiar with the Khan Academy YouTube channel?
I am.
Yeah, it's a huge channel that is used by many teachers to teach students about science. And oftentimes, it's a great resource. I mean, I'm married to a teacher, and she's used Khan Academy many of the times over the years. And my wife loves Khan Academy. But what we found in January is the Khan Academy video on the evidence for evolution was using the same icons of evolution that Jonathan Wells refuted in the year 2000. Haeckel's embryo drawings, the Tree of Life, the horse fossil series, homology in vertebrate limbs, and the circular arguments for homology. These were being used to teach students today about the evidence for evolution. And so the icons of evolution are still out there, but we took down, in a critique of the Khan Academy video on the evidence for evolution, we critiqued it on evolutionnews.org. So it's a great resource where people can get great information. And again, we're always going to provide you with documentation. And, you know, you want to go back and check out the original resources and literature, we're happy to provide that. We think it's very important to let people look at the original science so they can make up their own minds. So anyway, that's a great resource. Obviously, you guys do a great job at Christian Research Journal and your podcast and all your audio and video resources, Hank, of getting the message out. We really appreciate that and the opportunities to get our message out. And Discovery Institute also has a podcast called ID the Future, where we talk about many of these same things. So if you want to get a, you know, an unending dose of this stuff, you can come to us, and we're happy to provide it.
Yeah, that's great. You know, you mentioned ontogeny recapitulates phylogeny. You didn't use those words, but you did mention the icon. And this is something that is a myth that's continually perpetuated. I mean, it's a myth that never dies. I mean, it is zombie science.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's unfortunate that Haeckel's embryo drawings are still being used, because it's been known for over 100 years that he basically faked his drawings and that he used drawings that overstated the degree of similarity between vertebrate embryos in their earliest stages. And again, it's been known for over 100 years that those drawings were inaccurate, and they were even called fakes and fraudulent by Stephen Jay Gould in an article in the journal Science. So mainstream scientists have fully recognized that those drawings should not be used to teach students, and yet here they are still being used in Khan Academy videos. And I've got textbooks from just the last few years that are still using Haeckel's embryo drawings. Now, a lot of textbooks have taken those drawings out, to their credit, but they still overstate the degree of similarity between embryos in their earliest stages. So even though some progress has been made, a lot more progress needs to happen.
A final question, and that is an opportunity for you to underscore the transcendent importance of the discussion we just had, because our children are leaving churches en masse. I just did a conference, and one of the things I noted as I looked out on the sea of faces is that most of them were sort of in my age category. Most of them were older. There were some young people, but proportionally very few. And this is such an important issue for our kids to grasp, that the evolutionary paradigm is not the only show in town. It doesn't correspond to reality, and so many kids are leaving the church because they think it does.
There is truth to what you're saying, Hank. This is a very important issue. And look, I'm a Christian. I'm also a scientist. The arguments that I will make against evolution are based upon science. The arguments that I will make for intelligent design are based upon science. So I'm making these arguments based upon, you know, the scientific evidence and what I believe to be the best use of the scientific method. Now, that doesn't mean that science cannot have larger religious or philosophical implications. So if you tell people, obviously, that, you know, human beings are the result of an unguided evolutionary process, then that for many people has implications that point away to there being a creator God. But if you show them that there's scientific evidence that there is a designer behind life in the universe, that life did not just arise through unguided evolutionary mechanisms, that is very friendly towards a theistic worldview and belief in a creator. And I think it does impact people's worldview. So I think that this is a very important topic for many people. Don't think that the debate over evolution and intelligent design is no longer relevant. It's always relevant. In fact, a lot of the debates that are sort of the hot topics in society today over, you know, gender or identity or who we are or racial equality, I think that intelligent design can speak to these things. If you believe that there is a creator who created all of us in the image of God, I cannot imagine a more beautiful and wonderful way to articulate the equality and the value of all human beings, no matter what their racial or ethnic background is. And intelligent design certainly supports, you know, through a scientific argument, but it certainly supports that kind of a philosophical or theological view that there is equality behind all people, that we were created for a purpose with value and worth, And it's very consistent with the Judeo-Christian belief that we're made in the image of God, which I think is so important to articulate these days when there's so much racial tension, that we all have value in God's eyes. So I just want to say that I think that intelligent design has a lot to say to people who are wrestling with the key issues of life, key philosophical questions, and even some of the key political issues of our day. It's very relevant, and it's very important that we get the message out.
Thank you for listening to this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff and his guest, Dr. Casey Luskin. To hear this Hank Unplugged podcast interview in its entirety, go to equip.org, iTunes, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Our firm commitment here at the Christian Research Institute is to defend the faith once for all delivered to the saints and equip believers to become true disciples of Jesus Christ. In appreciation for your vital gift to help strengthen and expand CRI's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches, Hank would like to send you a copy of The Comprehensive Guide to Science and Faith, co-edited by Casey Luskin. Call a resource consultant at 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI. Or visit our website, equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded by listeners like you. We're on the air because truth matters and life matters more. When you need answers about the Bible and the intersection of our faith and culture, you turn to the Bible Answer Man broadcast and the Christian Research Institute. But did you know we're entirely supported by God's provision through friends like you? In appreciation for your gift of ministry support today, we'll send you Hank's book, The Third Day, a convincing case study on the most important truth of Christianity, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Johnny Erickson Tada has said, Hank leaves no stone unturned, thoroughly portraying the resurrection as our grand hope, the glorious springboard from which we all dive into eternity. Strengthen your defense of the resurrection and increase your confidence in your own eternal future. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org now.